You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders, at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media and Connecting Industry. I'm Kieran Moran. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Andy Evans, the CEO and founder of OceanX Energy. OceanX Energy is an Australian company who are progressing the development and construction of up to 5 offshore wind farms off the coast of Australia. Andy has 20 years of experience in Australia's energy sector and has been heavily involved in the development of renewable energy projects since 2006, firstly in onshore wind and bioenergy before introducing offshore wind to Australia in 2012. Welcome to the podcast, Andy.
Thanks, Kieran. Great to be on.
Okay, before we get into the Novocastrian offshore wind farm, let's get a little bit about yourself and so forth, and we'll also get on to OceanX Energy as well. You've been involved in the business of renewable energy for 20 years, as I said there in the introduction. You've moved across a number of different sectors within that, and then you moved over, of course, into wind. So before that, onshore wind and bioenergy, and now it's offshore wind. But before we start talking about that, how did yourself get involved in renewable energy?
Look, I actually started life, sadly, as a lawyer, big law firms, and then working for large mining companies, actually. So I've got a really good general energy mix background. So it was about 18 years ago when a large Spanish company, Acciona Energy, entered Australia and looking at wind farms. So having a good background in general sort of mining, energy and large infrastructure, it was a really good background to get into what was initially onshore wind, looking at the early development of onshore wind farms in Australia, and then moving through. And I think it was more boredom, I think, with being a lawyer, but also with onshore wind, I started looking at offshore wind with two partners in 2012. And that is what is, you know, now known as the Star of the South projects off the coast of Gippsland and Victoria. So, look, it's just been a general fascination with not just energy mix, but, look, large industry, supply chain and infrastructure, and particularly things at a national level that have a really good regional feel. So offshore wind sort of ticks a lot of those boxes, and we've been really fortunate that, look, it's taken us 10 years to get a little bit of prominence, but things are really going well, and it's only hopefully upside from here on in.
Well, as you said there, 10 years of prominence. So you said 18 years involved within it and so forth. How have you seen that? What was it like then to maybe now?
It was different with renewables of itself, you know, very different narratives. And arguably the narrative's been a little bit misguided. I think it was very much painted as a save the planet more than a great opportunity and part of our natural way of living lives. So I think a lot of the messaging has changed. It's been highly politicised for a number of years. So the main things we're starting to see now is more recognition of opportunities of energy, regardless of whether they're renewables, traditional fossil fuel or thermal. I think everyone's getting a bit more realistic as to how we want to live our lives, not just from an energy perspective, but from an Australia prosperity and opportunity perspective. So it sort of feels as though people are now looking at what are the opportunities we can get, rather than the pitfalls and the ideology, which was very misguided from every single side.
And that does seem to be a thing, especially the ideology of it and renewable energy and so forth. And just within that, as you said, with the, you know, that's what you've seen over the last so many years. How do you think that is all going in the movement of it? Because as we are moving forward, but of course, we're in the transitional period at the moment, and there is a lot of concerns in relation to renewable energy and wind farms and solar and so forth, and a number of things still need to be looked at. But how do you think the progress will go over the next few years with a lot of these projects?
Look, I think a lot of realism is coming into a lot of arguments at the moment.
That's true.
Look, I think people are starting to drop previously held views, which made little sense. Look, I keep referring back to the early 90s. sadly, I'm late 40s, but when I started driving, I never really thought, hang on a sec, I want leaded petrol in my car rather than unleaded. It was just like, okay, here are different sorts of fuels that we need to live our life. So I think you get guided by what's best for certain circumstances. And certainly when you look at energy, I've always been a bit lost as to why people look at certain opportunities or benefits of one type of fuel and totally discount others that don't have those benefits. So I think we're seeing now a really good mix of opportunities. I mean, clearly coal and gas have still got a critical part of how we live our lives and how we optimise it. Renewables also bring in a different way of optimising other areas. You know, certainly the cheapness of price of onshore wind and solar during the day is a benefit that obviously has impacts on coal and gas, which have other benefits, particularly around baseload. I think for all of us, it's just understanding you don't pick one winner. There are many different benefits and varieties. And I think we've got to look at it from an Australian perspective. We're really lucky. We've got so many different bountiful resources. So we've got a great opportunity to blend them all and mix them all together and get the benefits rather than worrying about all the downsides. You know, we can get really focused in this country on the downsides and we miss opportunities. So I'm hoping that pendulum sort of swinging a little bit to looking at how we can live better as Australians.
Okay, well, I'm going to get onto the Novocastrian offshore wind farm, the project that OceanX Energy is doing in New South Wales off the coast of the Hunter region, or Newcastle, I should say, to that point. But, okay, a lot of issues have come through with, so over the last couple of years, especially, you know, different states have managed to progress a little bit further in relation to their energy and the way they implement new energy into the grid. What issues, or if any, are you seeing at the moment with being able to get the power that is generated by the wind farms into the national electricity grid?
Yeah, look, I think the key thing that people are going to realise, particularly with offshore wind, its real benefit is the fact that you've got the wind resource really close to available grid. So all our projects for OceanX have been based around where we can access the grid. And that grid is always about where there's going to be exiting coal stations. So all of our grid in Australia is very much based around the coastline, located proximate to coal. So really obvious opportunities in Australia are Newcastle, Illawarra with Dapto, you've got a great connection point, the Star of the South and the Latrobe Valley. So when we look at these sorts of projects, access to grid is actually the key criteria for choosing a project. It's not about solely about the strength of the wind, which has really made it difficult for onshore wind farms previously. Many developers have looked at where the wind is great and then tried to work out how you actually get it to the grid. We flip that on its head. We always look to where is the available grid. So obviously Newcastle, the Hunter, when you look at sort of around Lake Macquarie as well, you've got, you know, about four key coal generators right there. And next to that, you've got, you know, all the grid. So that's what we really look at. That's why the Novocastrian project, which we originated almost 3 years ago, and we're aware there are a few other developers looking at projects as well. Its key advantage is that it's got access to available grid that's coming about the closure of Liddell, you know, and all the other coal generators in the region. So most projects' success for offshore wind, and the key reason for the success of offshore wind primarily is based around positioning them close to available grid. So we don't need build-outs of hundreds of kilometres of land-based overhead lines. We've got really short underground or through river connection points that are really only 10 to 15 kilometres from the coastline. So that's the big tick when you're looking at offshore wind, alongside the fact that its capacity factor or its ability to generate. Look, we're blowing, you know, at least 50% of the time. You've got a really constant generation profile. So not only can you generate a lot of electricity, you can get it to market really easily at the available grid.
Well, that is a smart move to flip that on the head and look at putting it into the grid first before where the wind actually is. It's a great way to do it, and I suspect that's from your past and understanding the whole industry and where it sort of needs to go. Now, as you said before, you started off with Acciona Energy and so forth, and as we've had them on this program before as well, and also presented at a number of our conferences around Australia, you're the CEO and founder of OceanX Energy. You obviously saw the opportunity and you've created a company. How did that come about?
A great part, Kieran, was boredom with being a lawyer, to be very honest.
Yep.
So I was a lawyer for about 15 years. And look, and it just wasn't really for me. I met some great people and you get some great skilled backgrounds, but I think I got to the stage of, you know, my mid-30s. I was very sick of being a lawyer and sick of working for others. So set up what was the Star of the South just over 10 years ago. And back then, even only a couple of years ago, people would still question offshore wind. They would say that a friend lived near a wind farm and it was like, no, there are none of these in the Southern Hemisphere. So, you know, it was a probably long, lonely journey for a number of years, myself and the two partners from the Star of the South. You know, and for us, it was just a method. I mean, sometimes you just got to go out and do things yourself. We were lucky enough, we knew it was big in Europe in particular. So we were fortunate to get really large Danish investment in 2017 for the Star of the South. We've been lucky with OceanX. Our backers now a European-backed fund. And look, I would dare say there'll be further investors coming in the future. So I think you'll see with a lot of other developers as well, a lot of them have started fairly small, and you've got to go out on your own because you tick a little bit differently. It's there's a lot of risk involved, and it sort of takes a bit of vision and I suppose survival of the fittest just to stay in. But, you know, it's hugely rewarding when you get to look at totally new industries you can introduce into the country.
Okay, well, as you said there, so you recognise the writing on the wall and where everything was going to be moving in relation to renewable energy and specifically within the wind sector, of course. And you've talked about, you know, taking a risk and so forth. And one of the points of this podcast is also to talk about business and the people who are in business. You can see the opportunity, of course, but you're obviously, you know, as we spoke just before this podcast, you know, you're up at 2:45, 3 a.m. the other morning, still working and so forth. And you've just gone on a break and just come back from a break, sorry, and hoping to have a little bit more of a quiet week, but that's completely impossible. What drives you to keep on going and to keep waking up and to, you know, remain healthy at the same time and make sure you don't go insane while you're pulling all this together?
Look, for me, it's very much about doing new things, and particularly new things that benefit people in certain ways. So there's a level of curiosity where there are certain itches you need to scratch. And I think once you get started, you do look at things. You have a tiny bit of success. We've got a long way to go, but it's always about looking at new opportunities. And, like, without doubt, the best feelings I get and, you know, my partners that I work with is when you get to a stage where you can start bringing on other people as employees or working with. They're the real sort of highlights. And you know that they don't have to be one-off. So I think once you actually do it, I never thought I'd have, I still get embarrassed using the word, an entrepreneurial sort of spirit within me. But I think once you start doing one thing, you want to do more and more because you see opportunities. So certainly it's the ability to, you know, once you see some tangible outcomes of your work, for me, that's very much about giving, you know, people jobs and work and opportunities and having people get involved in new things. You know, it's a really good feel, and certainly offshore wind's been great. We're still at the very start of the organisation, but I look at the industry. I look at Star of the South. We started 10 years. We've now got over 30 employees. OceanX, we're still fairly small with a handful of employees, but that will grow soon. And hopefully there's a lot more newer businesses and industries we can start.
Okay, we're speaking to Andy Evans, the co-founder and CEO of OceanX Energy, and Andy will be presenting at the Connecting Renewable Energy Conference New South Wales on October 27. That is an online conference for the supply chain, not just around New South Wales, but also around Australia and even internationally, as we do get a number of people from overseas also attending these conferences. Andy will also be presenting with a number of other different projects, including another offshore wind from Blue Float Energy as well, an energy estate, a combined project there. Also some battery minerals as well, Sunshine Energy that are developing a project as well across New South Wales. Let's just get on to the Novocastrian Offshore Wind Farm. I always get the pronunciation wrong. It goes up and down with that one for me, I think. But so this wind farm, it involves installation of offshore wind turbine generators over 20 kilometres from the New South Wales coastline to access the strong winds, of course, as you said, and to generate electricity. That's the fundamental of it. And it will be transmitted subsea to underground to existing nearby grid connection points in the Hunter Valley. and hopefully it will have the strong capacity, and of course it will, to generate electricity. Now, the project is expected to begin roughly, you're still going through a number of processes to get this project off the mark and so forth, but you expect it around about 2028, with construction to also take around 3 to 4 years, with a workforce of 300 people for this project. So let's just get into, you mentioned a little bit in relation to Newcastle and the grid and choosing those areas and so forth. What does it take to create a wind farm like this, and especially offshore?
Look, a lot of work. I think the thing that's taken the most time so far is just getting Commonwealth Government to put in place legislation, which they did late last year. It came into force effectively June this year, but it was passed in November of last year. So, you know, we need a lot of shaping of key stakeholders, particularly at a regulatory level. So we've got the government on board now. They put legislation in where we work closely with Minister Bowen, hopefully for him to declare an area later this year, which then gives developers the right to seek access for exploration for up to about 700 kilometres squared. So there's getting the legal rights to then be able to go out and do your studies. Now, those studies will take a 5 to 7 year period. Look, we'll spend over $200 million just to ensure that the project and every element is okay. We've got to do a lot of environmental studies. That's first and foremost a key thing. So it's not just a matter of people going and building projects. I think a lot of people misunderstand the process. You don't just get rights to go and build something without having done years of studies to prove that you're not having a great impact on existing sea life. So we'll have to go through those processes. We're doing a lot of viability work on the technology. I think one of the great opportunities for our Novocastrium project is because the water is so deep, 20 metres out from the coastline, it's about 500 metres of water depth. There's brand new technology called floating foundations. So they're very large foundations with turbines on top of them. So we need to do a lot of studies. We also need to bring the industry out and set up the industry here. And I think that's a great opportunity for Hunter. We've had about 3 years of working with industry. And just to clarify, on the jobs during the construction period of 3 to 4 years is 3,000 plus jobs for that 3 to 4 year period, and then it's 300 jobs for 30 years of operating and maintaining. So for us, hopefully we get a license from the Commonwealth Government later this year or early next year. That'll then kick off $200 million of spend, which will be a lot of local jobs even during that development process, and then get to 2028, and that's when you get the 3,000 plus jobs, which are very much around building the infrastructure. So building the foundations, they're very steel-based. So obviously we're very lucky, New South Wales steel production, obviously Port Kembla with BlueScope, some great fabricators, Civmec are a key one, obviously in the Hunter, amongst others. And we hopefully build a long-term industry that won't just service that one project, but hopefully other projects off the coast of Newcastle and also around Australia and New Zealand. So it's a long process. It's a very busy process, but look, it's not totally new. It's been done a lot throughout Europe, Asia, and the east and west coast of the US. So, you know, we think it's a great opportunity, particularly for the Hunter. Hunter's got this incredible mindset of 100 years of large industry. The jobs required aren't radically different from coal and a lot of the really large manufacturing industries. So it's probably for us the best place in Australia to look at starting an industry.
Now, as you said there, with construction and a workforce is over 3,000 people over that 3 to 4 year period, and of course a lot of it will move into the traditional workforce that's there already, but also create a lot of other different areas. And I also suspect it's also going to create a number of different opportunities, even though it might not be directly connected to the OceanX Energy project. But like lay down areas and a number of opportunities for a number of businesses to actually start and begin and create something completely new within the region.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of support services you don't think of. I mean, there's a lot of accommodation, a lot of food, a lot of transport, a lot of land-based logistics where you've got to put in, you know, componentry is going to come from other areas as well. There's a lot of, you know, quality, health and safety roles, a lot of resourcing. So we've already been speaking to HR based, you know, resource people in Newcastle and surrounds, looking at how we access people. So there's a flow-on effect. We'd also refer, look aside from the 3,000 direct jobs, which hopefully as many as possible will be local, there's also the indirect jobs. You know, it can be up to 7,000 indirect jobs that aren't directly working on the project, but are providing all those support services as well.
Yeah, and that's a great benefit to the region. And, of course, it's one of the things that a project like yours is one of the main interests within it. Now, as you said also before in relation to, you know, a lot of work still to be done in the environmental impacts and so forth, and there has been, a number of wind farms. It was amazing. We've had the people who support the renewable energy sector for the last few years pushing for a lot of wind farms, and I'm talking about onshore wind farms at this time, and to the point of where and then once they start being built, of course, sometimes they have to chop down trees, and some of those supporters of the renewable energy sector are now, some of them have been reconsidering, which are in actually the impact of these projects and how they are developed. And that's the reality of it. And, you know, everybody calls everything green, but in some respects, not everything is in green into the perception of what it is. But in relation to your project, what's some of the work you're doing there to get it across the line environmentally, and what's some of the issues that you do see there?
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone uses the word social license, which I think is an overused word, which a lot of people don't actually understand. I think obviously one of the key benefits we have is that there is a lot less human impact. We don't use a lot of land. We don't traverse land. Where we do come into contact with humans on land, we always seek to have underground cabling to connect electricity, so there won't be overhead lines. We're very aware, about how real people have to be as well. Look, we're still in a very heavily carbon-intensive industry. We're producing a lot of steel, so we have a lot of benefits, obviously, throughout the operational life. And once assets are out there, you know, they're not causing large drains on utilising other forms of energy. We don't have to feed coal, and we don't have the emissions, but, you know, we can't be that blasé to say that we don't have an impact. You know, we, as I said, we've got a lot of manufacturing involved. It's still carbon intensive in the lead up process. So we obviously seek to minimise by not having that land-based impact. Certainly with sea-based impact, we're looking at areas, we do all the fishing studies and other studies to ensure we're not impacting on other existing industries and aquaculture. So it's a very, you raise a really good point, Kieran, because you have a lot of people who are very pro and then they pick holes in other areas that may not suit their narrative. So there can be really conflicting views on support. And I think you'll always be guaranteed that there are people that won't approve what you're doing, but you just have to work with those people and understand the issues and try to balance out the benefits against the costs.
Okay, you've also said in relation to Ocean X Energy and some of the other projects you've got, from what I can see here, I can figure that you've probably got it wrong, no doubt, but around about 8 projects, 5 in Australia and 3 in New Zealand. How are they all developing? And also, just short in that respect, in the development of these, and which one do you expect to be the first one to kick off?
Look, there's a real priority around 2 of our New South Wales projects, so the Novocastion and the Illawarra offshore wind farms. So they're massive projects, and you're right, we can't be going full throttle at 8 projects. So we've initiated most of the non-New South Wales projects in terms of getting the footprint. We've done a lot of initial studies, but the real focus has been on Novocastion and Illawarra. We think they're the most progressed for a number of reasons, including the fact that local communities are ready from an industry perspective to start building these projects. The accessibility to grid really is, you know, whether you're looking at South Illawarra Adapter or in the north at Waratah and other connection points, look, they're well ahead of other projects in their ability to actually get to market quickly. Look, we know politically as well, there's a lot of support for those regions, and rightly so. I mean, the Hunter and the Illawarra are incredible in terms of their available setup. I mean, for us, it's always the mindset in those regions. People know how to do projects. You've got a really talented workforce, white and blue collar. So Novocastion and the Illawarra projects are clearly our lead projects. We spend time on the other projects, particularly over in WA at Bunbury, New Zealand. I'll come back there in about a month's time. But certainly Novocastion and Illawarra are our flagship projects.
Okay, well, of course, Andy will be speaking at the Renewable Energy Conference New South Wales on October 27. I might see if I can influence him to also talk about the Illawarra project as well on that conference. But thank you very much for joining us, Andy. It's been great having you, and definitely good luck with everything in the future. It's great work that you are doing.
Thanks, Kieran. I look forward to the conference.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast interview series with Kira Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.